All right. My name is Ron McCowan. I'm part of the leadership that loose herds this whole shooting match. We are not a church. We're not a organized group. We're just volunteers who come together. Two of us live in Texas. Lee Miller and his wife live in Virginia. Mark Roth lives in Costa Rica and Alaska. He makes his living in Alaska, and then he goes and enjoys winters down south of here. His sister runs the resource room upstairs. She does a good job of it, you know. My wife is in charge of chauffeur blowers, and that's her talent. I have no talent in that area. We're selling chauffeurs upstairs, and somebody says, "Oh, can you blow this?" No, I can't. If you want to hear it, my wife will be here after a while. She can blow it. But, you know, we just try to offer an atmosphere that lets you learn, lets you sleep late if you want to, or you can, this is your feast. You can do whatever you want to do. We don't keep roll of who's here and who's not. Yeah, be the stranger that sits off over there. I have been the pastor of a church. I was ordained by my congregation. But now I'm into prison ministry. We go into 6 prisons a month and offer Sabbath services to about 300 men scattered over those 6 prisons. I would do more, but getting time slots is a hard thing. So we are open to enlarging it. It just hasn't happened yet. Yahweh opens doors in his own good time. I was 40 when I was called into this walk, and it has been an interesting walk. Sometimes it seems to get hurried. Other times it seems like, well, where are we going from here? But if we just keep moving down the path, we'll be shown where we need to be. I also think that one of our greatest weapons is prayer. And it's probably one of our most neglected ones, because it's real easy not to pray. You get up in the morning and you're in a hurry and you need to go, and you know, and at night you think, oh, I'll pray tonight. Night comes and you're tired and you want to go to bed. 100 other things will get in your way of praying. But I'm going to talk today about a specific facet of praying. As you look around the room, you notice that all us guys come in different sizes and different shapes. Some are short, some are tall, and some are skinny, and some are regular size. And then there's us wonder guys. We're the hefty side of the family. Some have long hair, some have short hair. A few have no hair. So, you know, we got different colored eyes and different skin tones, and there's just a lot of things that make us different. Some of us live down in Texas where it's hot and dry, and then there's some of y'all live up here where the great frozen north will flow in, and y'all will get 20 foot of snow. And I just could not handle that. So I live on the other end of the country. But we all choose where we want to be. We have chosen different professions. I was a brick mason most of my life. I've driven a truck, and I've been in the corporate world for short stints. But we had to do something to make a living. People don't just come and drop money in your mailbox. So we choose different things. We like different foods. Some like it hot and spicy, and some think ketchup is way over spicy. So for some of us, we really like hamburger, and others, you know, they want to wait for that steak. So, you know, we're all created equal until we get to the dressing room at the gym, and we find we're not created equal. So, but we were created by our parents. They were creators of who we are. But all this is done under the watchful eye of Yahweh. His word says we're marvelously formed. He put us together just the way he wants us to be. And of course, we're always trying to make changes. People with straight hair want curly hair. People with curly hair want straight. You know, I used to have a red beard before I married my wife, and she changed all that. So, but these are just, you know, this is part of the manhood thing. We can grow hair on our face and women can't, you know. And that's kind of an interesting thing in itself, since woman was taken out of man, you know. Maybe then we'd only grow half beard and she'd get the other half. So we could go around and look for a beard that matched her own. You know, we're the men. We're the hunters and the gatherers. We're the ones that goes out and makes the living. We want to go out and kill something and drag it back to the cave. Then we want to build a big roaring fire and put it over it. You know, we're the barbecue men. But we're also the warriors and protectors, you know. Warriors, sometimes we start the wars, and sometimes we just fight in the wars. But we're protecting when we go to war, something that we think's important. We're either protecting our land or our family or the things that we really deem to be important and worth risking your life for. You know, we're men. We don't let people see us cry. We're tough. We're loud and boisterous for the most part. We don't mind getting dirty, but we can clean up fairly well when we're going to go out and support our chosen lady. And we do support them. We spend most of our income getting her to like us so that she will eventually marry us. When we're young, we go to the battlefield of competitive sports. We like to get out and play football and beat each other up on a legal field. And there's basketball and soccer and wrestling. Wrestling is probably the purest form of being the warrior, because you pin your opponent. And I'm sure if you're like me, at some point in your life, you played too hard, you drank too much, you drove too fast. You know, kind of burned you out on things. You would go do something really dangerous because somebody dared you to do it. You know, we'll take a dare. When we were young, we were 10 foot tall and bulletproof. You know, nothing could hurt us. We saw no danger that was going to really cause us harm. We would try nearly anything once. We didn't like the idea of rules and boundaries. You know, they were cramping our style, if we had a style. And we were so much smarter than our parents because they were old-fashioned. They were behind the times. At 17, we knew it all. We could go out and just, you know, you leave me alone and I'll make me $1 million. But by the time you got to be 21, you're just amazed at how much your parents have learned in those few short years. Because now they can guide you, because maybe you've matured just a little. You're kind of leaning on that peg where you're willing to listen. When we're young, we dream of that fast, sporty car, you know, shiny, four on the floor, bucket seats, bright red, black vinyl top. That was my dream. And I bought that car. But to buy it, I had to have a job. So I had to go out and find a job, and that's true of all of us. Nobody just gives us money. But after I had the car, I wanted my own man cave. Place for me to call home. I wanted a place where my friends could come over and I'd have the latest fathead football player tacked up to the wall. You know, and we could drink beer and we could watch football games. And, you know, you didn't have to keep it clean. There wasn't a mama there that said, clean this mess up. You didn't wash dishes till you had nothing clean to eat off of. And you went to the washeria when you went and pulled out your cleanest dirty shirt so you could go to work that day. But these are all things that we went through when we were younger. It's about this time when you get your own life set up and, you know, you think, I need a slave. But you can't have slaves nowadays, so we think a wife. She can come in, clean the house, cook my food. You know, and there's some fringe benefits that go with having a wife. So one of the fringe benefits that you'd see from this is that you're not having to go out there and spend all your money chasing women again. You got your own woman. But she would do the things for you that your mom used to do. She'd wash and iron your clothes. You know, and when you got around to the idea of while you're in the frame of thinking about getting married, you know, children somewhere get involved there. And as guys, we all want sons. You know, he was the perfect father. He had 12 sons. I don't know how many daughters he had. I know he had one, but I'm sure he had more than that. But he had those 12 sons. And they're one of the most dysfunctional families you ever read about. You know, and if you have children, you know, you got one that's the good little angel, does everything just right. And you got one that she or he, as the case may be, He makes you think about, where is the nearest adoption agency? I will put him up for adoption. All children are different, though. But our idea is these sons will grow up, and we'll be able to take them fishing. We'll be able to take them hunting. And hopefully, we will grow up to be friends eventually. So we begin a not too exhaustive search for this woman we need, this helpmate. And we're not really using a lot of our brain power in this search. We're thinking with a whole different organ. So we go out searching for the woman. And we find what we think will suffice us. You know, she's not perfect, but she's got enough qualities that you can check off a lot of things you like about her. And you get married, and it's usually not too long after the new wears off that you begin to experience difficulties. Maybe you don't make enough money, because you made plenty of money for your bills. But now you got your bills, you got her bills, and then you got our bills. So it's hard to make your money stretch sometimes. I know personally I'd worked two jobs the first 2 years that we were married. And that was just to pay the bills. There wasn't anything left over. And then, she's pregnant. Gonna have a baby. New expenses. There are doctor's visits and hospital bills and all the things that go with the baby. They need a crib, and they need the room painted, and no football banners on the wall there. You got to have these little giraffes and elephants and things. You know, you're making them a cave. Not like the one you enjoyed. But you find that sporty sports car that had been so much a part of your life when you were young, you have to drive it down to a car dealer and sell it, and or trade it for a clunker and get a little boot. So now you're driving around the clunker, and it always has something that needs to be fixed. Old cars are just that away. And the really hard part of this is that you might have to give up your man cave, which your wife has already ruined because she took down all your posters. She put up this frilly stuff on the wall. You know, she wiped the dirt off the windows and hung curtains. You may have to leave there and go back and live with one of your parents. And that is a terrible blow to us, that we would have to go and depend on our parents once again, or her parents once again, to get us through. You know, and as these problems grow, there's a resentment that grows. You know, and this is true of her as well as us. But this resentment grows because we think this woman just moved into our perfect spot, made all these changes. They took our closet space. They threw our stuff out of the drawers we had it in. You know, and we found all this stuff hanging in the bathroom. And go, this wasn't what I signed on for. But if you decide to divorce, she's already pregnant, so you'd be looking at least child support for about 18 years. And that will truly cramp your style too, because now you're supporting two houses. Either that or you put her up in a house and you're living under a bridge. You know, those are the choices we have. But if you decide that come hell or high water, you're going to stay together. And you've worked through a lot of these problems. You've rubbed the rough edges off each other. And then down the road a few years, you or possibly her, one of you, you come home and say, I've found a new religion. It's called Hebrew Roots. And I'm not going to celebrate Christmas and Easter anymore. And there's festivals, you know. I'm going to go away for 8 days during the fall. And I'm going to celebrate Passover. And she goes, you're going to what? And she truly thinks you have lost your mind. Because then you begin to talk Hebrew a little bit. Strange words come out of your mouth. Yahweh, and you know, it's not Pentecost anymore, it's Shavuot, and all these things. You go to meetings on Saturdays, you know. Why are you going to church on Saturday? And they ask all these questions. And we could kind of force them to go with us to some of these, but it would do no good, and it would build a wall that you couldn't penetrate later. So we have to be very gentle, very kind, very cautious. We have to answer her questions simply. Women are simple creatures. They like simple answers. If she asks you what time it is, don't tell her how to build a watch. Tell her what time it is. And she'll come back later and say, are you sure that's the right time? You know, this is her nature. So, let's back up a little bit to the time we were looking for a wife. If you were fortunate enough to be raised in a Torah observant manner, you know, was that where she was raised? When you started looking for a wife, is that where you looked? Divorce is caused by about three major reasons. And one is religion. Two is money. And three is the in-laws. Because when we marry a woman, we not only get her, we get her mother. And we can usually get along with her father because we got something in common. But that mother-in-law thing will get the best of you. You know, and there's those cousin in their family that you don't particularly care for. But she really likes them. They're over at the house all the time. And it causes friction. But when we're looking for that woman, we need to have a set of ideals up here that is really going to be a helpmate to us. You know, if we are, I know we're all set in our ways. The older we get, the more set we get in our ways. And, you know, that sometimes causes problems with wives. I know y'all don't have that problem, but I do. But men and women are just different, in case you hadn't noticed. They're not like us. They don't think like we do. You know, women want to talk, and when they're talking about this problem, and man, we got a solution for it. But they don't want a solution. They don't want to solve their problem. All they want to do is talk. They need to get it out of their system. So there are times when we just need to learn to shut up and at least pretend to be listening to what she's saying. Now, what she's saying may not make a bit of sense to you. You know, you go, this is the most illogical thing I ever heard of. But it's important to her. And it's a part of her nature that she be allowed to get this stuff out. The woman that Yah created, the bone wasn't taken from the top of the head so that a woman would lord over us. Wasn't taken. That's good South Texas language. It wasn't taken from his foot because we're not to trot our wives down. Rather, the rib was taken from under the arm so that we would be able to protect her, and it's very near our heart so that we will love her. These are the ways that Yah works things. He has patterns. And this helpmate, you know, Adam was created perfect. He would have had a joyful life, but there was something missing. And instead of Yah going out and gathering up some more of that red dust and making a separate creation that we could really complain about, he puts Adam to sleep, rips his rib out, and creates a woman. She is our flesh and blood. She is bone of our bone. And when we're torn apart, you know, there's something missing in our life. There's supposed to be a hole. And the woman you choose should fill that hole. Where you're strong, she may be weak. Where you're weak, she may be stronger. Women, as a general rule, are more spiritual oriented, not necessarily religious oriented, but spiritual. They perceive things before we do. We would be sitting at a potluck, my wife would kick me on the table and say, "Don't you see what's going on? I hadn't got a clue, guys." You know? But she had picked up on these things. And she would tell me, and then that'd usually get me in trouble, so. Anyway, when we were torn apart, she took some of the really good stuff we had. There's some men that tend to be more emotional than others, but for the most part, the women got the emotional side. They're the ones that'll just tune up and cry all over you over what you think is nothing. But to them, it's a big deal. They're tender-hearted, you know. They are home-oriented. When they have children, sometimes they forget that we're even in the picture. You know, we're just a sperm donor. We stopped by one afternoon and went our way. And yet, somewhere in there, there's got to be the balance where she cares for her children, she cares for her home, she cares for us as men. But then she also needs to have time of our own. You know, you and I need downtime. Sometimes we call it fishing or deer hunting or whatever else you sneak off and do without your wife. And your wife needs a little of that too. She needs a place and a time she can unwind a little bit. Because if you keep her wound tight, when the spring comes loose, you're going to get hurt. And that's just a fact. She also has a hole in her that we're supposed to fill. That's why the two of us can once again be formed into one flesh. We mesh together. We complement each other. Hopefully we've got some of the same ideas about raising kids. We've got some of the same ideas about religion. We've got some of the same ideas about what we're going to do with our money. And these should be discussions that we discuss before we get married, because these are really sticking points later on. We're the home builder. We're the protector. We're the provider. And she is a child-bearing machine. That's what she was designed for. It has been said that if men had to have babies, a couple would only have one and our population would be going down instead of up. And that may be true. There's a lot of pain involved, but the pain is nothing to the woman once she holds her child. It turns then to the joy of the child. And, you know, we expect her to keep our home, teach our children, take care of us, basically. The Bible tells us that he who finds a good woman a good wife finds a good thing, and that Yahweh blesses us for it. We were designed to be together with women. And once we are married, we can't allow our married life to just happen by chance. Because if we do, Satan is going to start to drive wedges and pegs and separate you and bring influences into your life which will be of no help to your marriage at all. As men, we have to stand up to Satan and we say that you will not have a part in this marriage. You will not drive a wedge between me and my wife. You will not let things out of our past, either one of our pasts, destroy our future. You know, we're in this together. We have made a solid commitment to each other. And it's a lot of people today get married, and they get married with the concept that if this doesn't work, I'll get a divorce and start over. Well, that's not a good way to start a marriage. A marriage is a blood covenant. And when you make a blood covenant, you swear all of your possessions and skills and energy will be spent to protect whoever you're in blood covenant with. In return, they say the same thing to you. If you're in blood covenant and your blood brother shows up, says, I need $1,000. If you're actually in a blood covenant, you don't even ask him what for. If you've got the resources, you give it to him, not knowing if he'll get it back. But the assumption is that he needed it for something. Maybe he's going to buy horses and take them and sell them. But eventually you'll get it back. Blood covenant is what we have signed on with Messiah. He told us what he would do for us, what the conditions were if we agreed to this. But on our side of the blood covenant, it's a blank because we don't know what we're going to be called to do. And having a woman to travel with you down that road is one of the most important things that you can have at your side. She's your support. She lifts you up while you're protecting her. When we have children, we want our wife to be an able teacher. We want her to teach our children about who Yahweh is. I don't know that you can teach a child love of Yahweh, but you can set an example. And when I'm talking about the woman, I'm not excluding the men. These things are as true to us as they are to them. We are to teach our children. We talk about it at the Shema every morning. There are teachable moments with your child, and they can almost come in a flash. You can miss them. But there are teachable moments when you can reach out and you can touch your child's life in such a way that it will make a minor correction. But if you're going to go 1,000 miles and you're 1 degree off here, you miss the mark by a long way at 1,000 miles. So a small correction done regularly will hopefully keep our children in the traditions that we've learned. We are to teach our children diligently, and we're to have the kind of helpmate that helps us do that. We just have to be bold with Satan, tell him we're going to guard our wife against anything that he can throw against us. But we've got a promise from Yahweh. He says there is no weapon formed that will prosper against us. So if we're doing our part, and prayer is certainly a part of that, then we know that we will be okay. One of the biggest problems in marriage is communication. He said, she said, you know, women talk a little bit different language than we do. Their words mean different things, and we have to get up to speed, or we don't know what they're talking about. But when we've finally chosen a wife, then we come to the point where we need to pray for her, and we need to pray for her, and we need to pray again. It's a constant process. And you're going to pray that she will receive the gifts that will prosper her. And hopefully, she's praying the same kind of prayers for you, because we're all deficient in some part of our life. But we are one flesh. We are joined together. We are blood covenant. So we need to travel on down this road together. We need to prop each other up. Whatever affects her affects you. And whatever affects you affects her. So communication is so important. And I'll be the first to admit that sometimes my communication with my wife of 43 years, it just goes right over my head. But when it does, you need to go back and stop and say, now, what are you really talking about? What's bothering you? And that's usually when they say, nothing, and walk off. And, you know, we're the guy. We're going to solve this problem. I guarantee you, all you're going to do is get in trouble, because you'll wind up making her really mad, and words will be said that shouldn't be said, and then there's repentance and apologizing and, you know, establishing the smooth water again. But we pray for our marriages, because whatever we sow sparingly, we reap sparingly. So let's say you pray for your wife once a week. Are you going to expect a whole lot of result? But what if you pray for her every day? It can just be a prayer of thanksgiving that Yahweh sent this woman into your life. You know, Yahweh sent me a wife that I was going to need before I even knew I needed Yahweh. I was the first one called in, and it amazes me even to this day that she followed in the faith. Now, if you happen to marry a woman and all of a sudden you turn Hebrew Rudy on her, and she just says, you're nuts. I ain't doing this stuff. I ain't going with you. You say, that's okay. I've seen families or marriages where the man and the woman could get along just fine because she was not actively opposed to his religion, being Hebrew Rudy Tudy or whatever. But I've also seen marriages where the spouse who was non-believing was also antagonistic toward his religion. They did everything that they could to put roadblocks in there. It was a constant hassle. You know, why can't we go somewhere on Saturday? Because you're going off to church. You know, it just, and that kind of thing just grates on you. You go home and it's there every day. If they're actively opposed to what you believe. And Paul talked about that in that situation. You know, as long as you can live with a woman that doesn't believe, and I'm this cuts both directions. You should live with her. You're married. You're in that blood covenant. Maybe by your example, you will convert her. And maybe you won't. But it says the unbelieving spouse is sanctified because we believe. So So she's under a protective umbrella, whether she believes or not. Now, one that is antagonistic, I don't think that they're going to be sanctified. I really don't. You know, there are just too many things that if you actively oppose Yahweh, your life's just going to be in chaos. What do women want? They want a man that is a man. And I'm not talking about a man. They're talking about someone who they can put complete trust in. They will follow where he goes. They want a good, strong father for their children. But they also want him to be a caring father, a compassionate father, one that loves his children. And one of the things we need to look for in a woman when we were going to get married, we need to have that talk about children. Women are naturally supposed to have a love for children. But I'm not going to say that. There are just some women who do not have a mother instinct. And if that's the woman you're looking at, and you really desire children, that's going to be a problem. So it needs to be worked out ahead of time. They want a family leader. Women, by their nature, do not like to lead. Now, churches are full of women who teach. They teach the kids, they teach Sunday school. And it's simply because men won't step up and do the job they're supposed to do. That's our failure, not theirs. They fill that gap. And if you're not a leader in your own home, that woman will fill the gap. But she also loses respect for you. So, she wants a man who is submissive to the Holy Spirit. You know, you can't keep your nose stuck in the Bible all the time. You need to come out and do things. Hebrew is a verb-driven language. It says that learning is fine, but you have to apply it. If you look at Matthew 25, Yeshua is talking about dividing sheep and goats, both of them perfectly acceptable as sacrifices, but they're separated here. And the sheep are given these instructions. You know, I was hungry, you fed me. I was naked, you clothed me. I was in prison, you came and visited me. You said, come on into the kingdom. Turns to this other group and said, you didn't do that. But you notice what's missing from there? It doesn't say anything about I went to church or synagogue every Sabbath. You know, I didn't know every little facet of the Torah. Torah's important. But putting Torah into action in your family life is more important. You know, if you read one verse and you can take that and put it into effect, you've done more than if you read the whole Torah every week. Because it is an action language. We are not to be spectators in this sport. We're participants. And we are to be the captains and the quarterbacks, because That's the job that was given to us. Now, when we start to pray for our women, we can pray that the woman that we have married will grow to have a really loving spirit, a strong faith. You know, sometimes I feel like Yahweh called me to get Donna because she seems to, you know, have this spirituality thing that somehow I'm just not up to speed with her. But that's okay. She teaches me things, and we work through things together. When I have a problem with Hebrew, she's the one I go to. I say, you studied Hebrew, now tell me how to deal with this. We want a woman whose words build people up and not tear them down. It is so easy to tear people down. Tear your kids down. Couples tear each other down with their words. We should pray that our wives understand that they are loved by Yahweh more than we can love them. We may love them. We may love them with all our heart. But Yahweh's love is greater than anything we could have. We need to realize that all the things we'd like to have in our wife are not going to be there. But we can pray that Yahweh will send those gifts through the Holy Spirit. He will open her mind to receive these things. And you notice that it doesn't say gifts with an S. It says the gift of the Holy Spirit. And there are all these things that come to us, and sometimes we think we can't do that. I don't have that. You know, I know some people that are just joyful all the time. And I don't have that spirit of joy. Now, I have a lot of joy in my life. But, I mean, these people just bubble. And I am not that way. So, we can pray that the gift of the Holy Spirit will be manifest, not only in us, but our wives. And if it's manifest in us and our wives, it will just leech on down to the children. You know, they watch us. Kids want to do what we do. Because we're the daddy. And daddies are important. We're not just sperm donors. We're the glue that really holds the family together. But too often, men decide to be sperm donors. You know, it's wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, they're out the door. So children grow up without a father. And study after study after study has shown that a household without the influence of a man in it, the children suffer. So we need to pray for our wives, that they be good wives. We want a wife who has discernment. You know, she can emotionally feel what's going on around her. But she needs to nudge us and keep us up to speed. We want a woman that studies the word of Yahweh, studies his instructions, and puts them into effect in her life. And we can pray for that. We want a woman who's willing to step into a leadership role if she's called upon to do that. Like I said, I don't blow the shofar. That is my wife's gift. And she has been the shofar blower for this feast site, I guess, nearly since the beginning. You know. But she would have no problem with a man taking her place, because she knows that men are supposed to lead. We need to pray about those things. We want her to be a light to us, because she does study and she does pray. But we also want her to let that light shine to others around her. Women connect to women. Guys connect to guys. You know, some of the best times I ever had was just guys out on a fishing trip. You know, drank a little beer, drowned some worms, sit and talk about our experiences, laugh together. It's a bonding process. And it's something your male children need to do with you. Bond together. But the same is true for women. Women bond together because they have common shared interests. When we're praying, we want to pray that our wife is an emotionally stable person. She doesn't have these big, massive swings, you know, from the mountaintop right into the valley. We want her to be emotionally stable. Because if she's emotionally stable, she'll be able to clearly think about any problem that's coming into our life. She won't be a woman then that will accept lies told about her. And if she's being a godly woman, somebody is going to tell lies about her, try to tear her down. And it's our job too to deflect those lies, to stand up and say they're not true. We have to defend our wives. A woman wants to be secure in the fact that she knows that we as husbands truly love her for who she is. You know, we're not loving an ideal that we got out of a magazine. She may not be the prettiest woman in the world, but she is the one you chose to be your wife. So every day she should grow in beauty in your mind and in your heart. You know, my wife complains all the time because I say she's beautiful. And she's been out at the tractor and she's got grease smeared across her forehead. But she's a beautiful woman. Now, she won't ever make the cover of Vogue magazine or whatever it is. But to me, she's one of the most beautiful women in the world. The woman that you choose to be your wife and the mother of your children should demand obedience and respect from your children until they can reach a point where they understand that that respect and that obedience was because she was such a loving and compassionate mother. And then they will truly rise up and call her blessed. You know, we'd all like to think about the Proverbs 31 woman. And I guess she's the ideal. But we live in a culture now that we're looking at, women who are not like our mothers. Women that either want to work or have to work. We're fast approaching the point where it takes two incomes to keep the family going. So one of the things that we should look for in our wife and pray about is, is she going to work? Is she going to work outside the home? What's going to happen after children are born? Is she going to be a stay-at-home mom? Is she going to start some kind of home business? Are we going to have a business together that'll help support this family? All these are things we need to go to Yahweh about. And there are a multitude of other things. Sexuality. You should pray to Yahweh about your sex life. You know, do we really understand her needs? Can we fulfill her? You know, for guys, we get our cookies pretty quick. But have we really reached the emotional point that the wife is sexually satisfied? This is a part of that two flesh becoming one flesh. You know, and it's a great gift from Yahweh. So we need to have that on our prayer list. I'm not going to tell you that I'm real smart. Oh, the one other thing I'll tell you. If you've never lived around a woman other than your mother, and you marry a woman, you're going to find that at least once a month, she is going to have these wild mood swings. She's got hormones that are running crazy. You know, there's times you kind of want to throw your hat in the door before you go in. And if a plate comes back at you, you just close the door and go to your shop or something. But this is the way the woman's made. That's part of her nature. Her body is changing. It's setting up to begin a new life. And when it doesn't, there's this death. And that's something that, you know, is really hard for us guys to work around. We like to be fairly level. And here we see our wife going, ooh-doo-doo, ooh-doo-doo, ooh-doo-doo. And that's the time we have to be really, really caring. I'm not real smart. Most of what I told you came out of this book. I think it's in the resource room. It's The Power of a Praying Husband. And it's written by a woman named Stormy O'Martin. She's a speaker, and this is written actually in collaboration with her husband, who she asked him to write it during football season, and he was too busy. So she asked a lot of women in her travels, talked to a lot of men, took some surveys, and this is the book she came up with. It goes much deeper into every subject I've talked about. There's a bunch of subjects that I hadn't talked about. But at the end of every chapter, she's got this thing called prayer power. And when we're praying, we need to use our wife's name specifically. Yeah, I want this for Donna. Or if we happen to be praying about one of our kids, you know, use their name. Be specific. And it's not that Yahweh doesn't know the name, but he knows all our needs, but he wants us to ask. He's a father, a loving father, but he still likes to be asked. So use of that name is important. And then on the next page after, not sure what I call this page here, prayer power, talks about how to pray, the kind of how you would form the chapter into a prayer. And then it has power tools, and that's scripture verses that deal with the chapter you've just read. I found it to be a really good book. She's also written one called The Power of a Praying Wife. And I know we're running late, but anybody got a question? Or am I such a perfect teacher that y'all learned it all? Yes, sir.
No, I think it's a